This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 18th of March 2015 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Emma Nelson. This is your daily appointment with our international critics and cultural experts about the shows to see, the books to read and the records to stick on repeat each week. Today I'm delighted to say Louise Levine, journalist and critic at the Financial Times here in London, joins me in the studio to discuss a handful of dance highlights in production this March. And Louise, we have a Swan Lake special with one production currently being performed by the Royal Ballet at the Royal Opera House here in London and another at the Paris Opera over about 2 and a bit hours over on Eurostar. Plus, we discuss Shobhana Jayasinghe's production or interpretation of the 19th century ballet La Bayadère. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome, Louise. We've seen productions of Swan Lake come and go, and it's perhaps a standard by which we almost measure the quality of an arts venue, isn't it? Now, this production that's being shown at the Royal Opera House is coming to an end after 30 years. This is its swan song.
Yes, they do say, informed opinion says that it's being put out to grass. After premiering, I was there in 1987. They think it's had its day and they haven't given any announcements as to who's going to do the new one. There are things wrong with this production, but there are a lot of things right with it. I personally would go around with the scissors rather than get rid of it altogether because, you know, it's public money and it sells out.
What is it that's kept this one going longer than any others? Because yes, we are used to productions of both opera and ballet going for a long time, but this is quite a stayer.
Well, it is a stayer, but I mean, it's George Balanchine, the great Russian-born American living choreographer, said all ballets should be called Swan Lake because then everyone would go, you know, and it would sell out. People love it because, obviously, of Tchaikovsky's music. They like a ballet they can hum. It has a powerful story, which most people know, but okay, it's Prince meets Swan, Prince tricked into swearing undying love for lookalike of Swan, Prince loses Swan. It's very simple, very powerful, totally tragic. And, you know, any given night at the Opera House, last night I went to the Opera House, I am sure more than 50% of the people there were virgins in Swan Lake terms. It's the ballet you want to see, it's the ballet you want to hum. And if you're going to a destination theatre like the Paris Opera, like the Royal Opera House, then you'll see one that you know. So this is fine. But it has a, you know, one doesn't want to use words like mythic resonance, but it's got it, you know?
It's got it. And this production has sustained for 3 decades. What is it, do you think, that has required it to go? You mentioned it need a little bit of snipping.
Yeah, well, it has a kind of, it's of its period in the sense that it has a slightly neuromantic, fussy element to the design, and that could be toned down.
Which would be sadly dreadful if it were to happen, that neuromantic style would re-emerge in the next 2 years.
Well, you see, that's the other thing you can't always predict, because it can ride out, as you say, it can ride out those fashions. And fundamentally, the text is absolutely kosher. It was taken from the original notations. Anthony Dowell worked very hard to make it as authentic as possible in terms of the steps. And so that really sustains it. And the other stuff is just window dressing. And that, I think, is fixable. But we'll have a new one. Maybe it'll be marvellous.
Do we know anything about the new Swan Lake?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing I'd be prepared to say out loud, no.
Fine. OK, no problem at all. So okay, Let's focus on this one then. The two dancers that people have mentioned are Marianela Nunez and Carlos Acosta. Someone said they're sparking off each other in a way that is rarely seen on stage. This sort of knocks the likes of 50 Shades of Grey out into next week. It's quite a hackneyed phrase to use, but you do need that great excitement between Siegfried and the Swan, don't you?
You do. You need big dancers. It's not a ballet you can just throw anybody on in. It's a test of the mettle of the performer and their, you know, their stamina and their artistry. They're very good together. They weren't actually scheduled to dance together, I don't think. I think she was scheduled to dance with her husband and he was scheduled to dance with another dancer who was injured. But there are some great casts throughout the run. I mean, there are 3 Russian guests, You know, there's Natalia Osipova, Evgenia Obravtseva, who danced last night and did a splendid performance, and Vadim Montagirov, who's now with the company, who's dancing next week. So there's lots of, I mean, there's hardly a bad cast in the run, you know, so that's very exciting. And it's why, you know, nutters like me can continue going back, because you never step into the same lake twice. Because each pair of dancers, each individual dancer will change it so much.
So if you were to be, if you have until, I think, April the 9th to watch this particular performance at the Royal Opera House, would this now be the chance that you clamour to get tickets?
Yes, you would. But happily, the Opera House always has a number of day seats, which you can get at the last minute at the very back of the amphitheatre. It's a long way back, but it's a good view. And, you know, people book to go months and months in advance. There are always returns, as there are with any popular show. It's just a question of putting the legwork in.
And of course, if you are unable to get a ticket for this one, you head to St Pancras Station, about 20 minutes in a taxi, and you hop over on the Eurostar, poor you, but you get to Paris, and then you get to go to Bastille, and then you get to go to the opera to see the Nureyev production from the 1980s.
Yep, 1984. It's even older than the Royal Ballet one.
But they're not retiring this one.
Not as far as I know. And it's very different. It's very Nureyev. He had been making versions of Swan Lake since shortly after he came to the West in 1964. He made the first one for Vienna, I think it was. And he always, as he did with every classic he reinvented, he stuck to the text to a very great extent, but he really beefed up the male side of the dancing because he himself was taking those roles at first. And so the polonaise in the first act of Swan Lake, for example, is usually a lot of couples milling about, 16 men giving it everything, because he, you know, at that time he was really building up the strength of the male side of the company, which he had just taken over, and he wanted to show that off. And likewise, Siegfried gets a lot more beautiful solos to dance, which he of course himself was dancing, and a whole generation of men that he trained and I suppose in his image, in a way, you know, great dancers like Laurent Hilaire, and we're, you know, that makes it very different. And
how does it change the dynamic of Swan Lake? Because you said you never step into the same lake twice, but you step into clearly a very different feeling one.
Well, yes, it does. It's a much more psychological interpretation. The prince's tutor also is the evil birdman who turned Odette into the swan princess. But in fact, it's all going on in the prince's head. It's all a dream of the idealized woman, which is, you know, it's a valid interpretation. It's fascinating. And when you've got 32 swans to play with, and, you know, the tutus are all in place, I think you can allow a little latitude. You know, Tchaikovsky is certainly big enough.
This is it. And Le Figaro has gone bananas for this production. It says Les Signes d'Excellence, playing rather brilliantly on newspaper headlines. It says that it explains and it rediscovers the delicate interior nature of sadness, which to me says it has a very dark side to it.
Well, it is a very dark ballet. I mean, you know, you see people taking little girls in frocks along to see it, and you think,
don't do it, madam.
Is this the place? Is this the time? You know, it is. It's a very dark, very sad story. It's about not gaining your dreams. I mean, there are Soviet versions where it has a happy ending, and that works too. As I say, Tchaikovsky's big enough for this. But generally speaking, you know, we like them both to throw themselves into the lake and be reunited in death, you know, and that's not exactly family fun, is it?
There's one article which discusses this production at the Paris Opera, which is actually quite critical of the Paris Opera in its entirety. It says that there is a habitual weakness to dancers at the Paris Opera. Would you say that that was true? Because this article then goes on to say that this production of Swan Lake actually pushes the Paris Opera's ballet onto an international standard for the first time in goodness knows long how.
Oh, I think that's very harsh. You know, all companies have their ups and downs. But the thing about Swan Lake is it's a workout. I mean, that's a very crude way of putting it, because it is, you know, a thing of magnificent artistry. But it really keeps your corps de ballet on its mettle. And, you know, to produce that level of dancing for three solid acts really tests the stamina and builds stamina, you know. And yeah, they've got 32 swans in proper tutus, in proper tea plate tutus. One of the things people have never really been entirely happy with the Anthony Dowell production in London is that they wear floppy little skirts with jaggedy hems, which is, you know, very nice for a party, but you want to see their legs. You know, you want to know that their tendus are all in place, and it's very thrilling to see that one ballerina multiplied a three dozen times, which is what it's like. It's like a It's like a magic mirror.
Sounds amazing. Now, if you are unable to see that, well, you probably can get tickets to see the production at Paris Opera if you're lucky and you try hard.
If you're lucky
people.
And you try.
Swan Lake has been shown on a screen in the cinema in London in the last 24 hours as an example of what the Royal Opera House is doing more generally and has done for a couple of good few years now, which is bringing their big productions to the big screen. And I've seen a couple of their operas and I've never walked away feeling entirely satisfied because I haven't seen a film and I haven't seen an opera and I've always found it short falling between the two. In terms of putting the ballet on the screen, how do you think that works?
Well, it didn't used to work. I mean, it used to be a sort of aide-mémoire. You know, you'd look at the DVD and think, oh, yeah, it's there sort of thing. But it was very pan and scan, you know, lots of mid-shot, not a great deal of close-up. But the latest generation of ballet live screenings have been directed by Ross McGibbon, who used to be a dancer himself. And he watches the stage with my eyes. You know, it's where I want to look. You know, I don't always want to look at the big picture. Sometimes I want to see, you know, what Giselle's doing with her hands. Sometimes I want, you know, I want to be... And he seems to move the camera around in a very, very intelligent way. So that makes it much more immediate. And some of the dancers, like Osipova, who was dancing last night, is someone who really rewards that close inspection, which you can't have at the theatre, even, you know, unless you're just glued to your, you know, weapons-grade binoculars. You're not going to get that level of detail. And so I think it's actually working very well. And the high definition is tremendous. And not everyone can go to the Opera House at all, ever. You know, if they don't go to London, if you know, you think of the cost of the transport, the cost of staying there, the cost of the ticket, whereas your local cinema, very comfortable, you're getting all of that, and all the opera houses in the world are doing it.
As long as they're doing well. Louise, let's turn now from the most traditional ballets to a new work, well, sort of, premiering in the Lynbury Studio Theatre in the Royal Opera House, that, of course, is glued on to the Royal Opera House main house, but this is a place of smaller scale and arguably a place where you can take bigger risks. And the new work is inspired by the 19th century ballet La Bayadère, which is a ballet with all the blockbuster boxes ticked. There's a princess, there's a love triangle and a planned murder. Now, Shabana Jayasinghe has taken the work, which is often known for its racism and colonialism and orientalism, as we're going to talk about in a minute, and rescuing it for a new audience. Louise, what's your verdict on this new interpretation?
Well, it doesn't premiere. It's in preview at the moment, but it doesn't premiere and the press don't see it till next Wednesday. So I can't say definitively, but I think it sounds like an intelligent approach. You know, you could make a real pig's ear of this. And I think she's gone in with a very light touch by the sound of it. The thing is that, like all 19th century ballets, you know, Swan Lake, for example, Act Three, we have Hungarian dances and Italian dances and Spanish dances, and they are pastiche, you know, and it is just raiding the dressing up box. Of course, once you start looking east and doing that, 100-150 years later, that starts looking very odd. And in some productions of La Bayadère, you have little children blacked up, for example. But, you know, this isn't authentic India. You know, this is no more authentic than a, you know, chicken tikka potato crisps. You know, it's we're not in India. We're in 1877 St. Petersburg. And the, you know, it was a very, very different world. And I think we should be able to factor that in and contextualize it as we look at these stereotypes.
Why do you think Jayasinghe therefore talks about the fact that she's had to unpick what she's describing as a colonialist mindset? I mean, she's talked about people no longer blacking up for Othello, so why should they have this element in La Bayadère?
Yeah, sure, ballet is the only place where you still see it, that's for sure. I mean, you know, you don't even get Western actors doing King and I, do you? I mean, we're very, very strict about that, and yet there are... But, you know, I mean, why should... You know, why should, even if it were authentic Indian dance, which, as I say, it isn't, it's embellished classical dancing, why should any type of dance be ring-fenced? You know, we have black dancers in classical ballet without any problem. We have black Siegfrieds and black Romeos, and, you know, that's absolutely fine. So, anyway, what Jayasinghe felt, and she, understandably, as a woman who grew up in India and is a classical Indian dancer, this isn't Indian dance. She felt very uncomfortable with it, and so she's unpicking it by having her main character as a man who has seen the ballet and is blogging about it on his iPad. I can't really picture this.
I started to wince when I read that.
Not sure. We have to wait and see.
It's one of those convenient ways of framing something
that's
difficult.
Right.
And
that's
you wonder whether it is a bit too convenient.
And she's also exploring the historical fact of why everyone fell so in love with Indian dance itself. In 1838, a troupe of genuine Indian dancers were taken on a tour by a French impresario who brought them to France. Everyone just fell in love with their grace and artistry. This wasn't a novelty act. This wasn't local colour. This was a genuine admiration. And they wanted to kind of pick and cannibalise little bits of that for their own dance. You know, that's a kind of multiculturalism in a crude sort of 19th century way. It is embracing, admiring, copying.
It's Orientalism in another form.
Well, yes, it is. But, I think it's important to see things however crudely and wrongly they were done. We need to see where we were so we can see how far we've come and so we can understand. You know, nobody shows Shirley Temple films anymore because chances are there's going to be a black man saying yasm at some point and that mustn't be, you know, that. But don't we need to know that we were there so we can understand?
Louise, thank you very much indeed for joining us. The La Bayadelle, the production by Jaya Singh, Shabana Jaya Singh, is on at the Mac Arts Centre in Birmingham on Wednesday the 18th of March. I've played in a previous life on the stage of the Mac Arts Centre in Birmingham. It is tiny. Then it moves between March the 25th and 28th to the Limbury Studio Theatre in London at the Royal Opera House SGA stage, which I hope is slightly bigger. But in the meantime, Louise Levine, critic and journalist at the Financial Times, many thanks. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Emma Nelson. Join us again tomorrow for this week's literary highlights. But for the time being, thank you for listening.